And what I realized, though, is that I had it backwards. I thought achievement led to identity, which led to acceptance. And I just had it completely backwards.
You're listening to the 95 Podcast from the team at 95 Network, where we host conversations specifically to support leaders in small and mid-sized churches. Well, welcome back to the 95 Podcast. As always, my name is Austin Savage, and I'm here with my good friend, Dale Sellers, and we are your hosts. Dale, how are you doing today?
I thought you were going to say, hello, I'm Dale Sellers. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's me. I'm a little frazzled, to be honest with you. I know this is going to be a great podcast, and I'm excited for our guest. Yeah. We are in the midst of recording a new resource to help small churches, and I'm so excited about it. And already what we've gotten in the can is great, but I have turned my upstairs bonus room into a video studio.
Yeah, we're doing
a new series that we're going to call Small Church Strategies.
Yeah.
And they're little 30-minute teachings, individual teachings that churches can get over all types of topics. And, you know, we're going to cover the basics, the mission, vision, that stuff. But also, like, I'm doing one called Preaching to Equip. I'm doing one called The Handoff, which is talking about handing off your ministry to the next gen. Just recorded one of our 95 Network team members, Marianne Sibley, came over, and we recorded two specific teachings that she does in the realm of volunteers. That'll be on there. Brett Carter's going to come do some, specifically speaking to the African-American community. So there's just, I'm so excited about these things. But I also did not have a computer big enough to handle all this. And so I'm learning about a 4 terabyte, what is it called?
Terabyte.
There you go. That's a Bible word. It's a Bible word. But anyway, I'm learning about external hard drives, and I'm learning that you can't continue just to download huge video files onto your, and when you do an iMovie. I'm learning a lot of things, and it's not been fun. But I know the end results will be good. And then I want to tell you, a springboard that came off of this idea is, you know, we do 2 1-day conferences right now. We do one called Growth Engines, 5 Core Actions for a Healthy Small Church. And then we started the new one, the Stalled of Freedom Conference. Well, the Lord just gave me this idea a few weeks ago to offer a third conference. And I think this will be specifically for churches that have already had us in before. We're going to do a third conference called Small Church Strategies, where the host gets to pick the topics. And so the host gets to pick the 5 topics based on out of the videos we've recorded. So it's really cool. I love the small church. I love what we're just trying our best to find ways to help it, to encourage it, to resource it, which is the springboard for why we have this guy on today, because he's an expert in this arena. And so we're ready to sit at his feet and learn ideas about how to help and connect with the small church. What a setup.
Truth. Yeah. So we have Chris Vitarelli on the podcast today, and he is a pastor of the Road Community Church and also the founder of the Small Church Big Deal Conference. And he is also speaking with you, Dale, at the Big Little Church Conference, which, when we're recording this, is next week. Yeah. When this goes out, it will be in the past.
Chris and I will be there with Carl Vaders in Camas, Washington. This is an annual conference that happens. And man, I'm just ready to be, this is going to be so much fun hanging out with these guys and with the pastors there. And the other thing that's really happening is you can feel the thaw, because we are getting bombarded with requests for in-person events now. So that's really cool. Yeah. And so we get to hang out with Chris. And actually, Chris, where do you live?
I live in Michigan. If this was a video, I would have to hold up my Michigan map that I carry with me everywhere I go, and I could show you exactly
where. Is it
where.
Your but hand or something different?
Exactly. Yeah, the mitten. Yeah. But I live just south of Flint, Michigan. And so I've been in Fenton and Howell for about 10 years now.
I was in Michigan about a month ago. I did a vision day with the church. I flew into Grand Rapids, is that right? And then went north about an hour, right in the middle of the state. And it was the coldest I've ever been. It was like 4 degrees one day. And the pastor that I was with, he and his wife, they get out and they go walking every day, no matter what the temperature is. They just act like it's not cold. And I'm like, what's wrong with you people?
Well, no, see, when it hit about 35 here, people were wearing shorts into the Target and stuff. Yeah,
this is no lie. I think I hit this before, but this just blew my mind. I went to a restaurant as I was, I had breakfast and I was heading to the airport. It was 4 degrees. And there was a dude who went in with shorts and flip-flops on. It was 4 degrees.
Yep.
I'm going, these are a different breed of people up here.
Hearty, yes. Very robust. Yeah. Michiganders. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're excited to have a Michigander on here today.
Yeah. We're recording this late April. And at the beginning of this week, I live in central Illinois, and it just snowed this week. Did it for you guys as well?
Yep. It snowed. We're supposed to be playing softball. But we couldn't because there's snowflakes falling. So, it was really weird.
The place that I just literally was at in Southwest Ohio this past week and got 4 inches. And I'm like, I've already been to the beach for a week. Well, Gina and I have been to the beach, laying on the beach in 80 degrees here in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And that was 2 weeks ago. So you guys can keep that stuff, man.
It is crazy. Well, Chris, we always love to start with just our guest stories. So take a minute and just give us a little rundown on the journey God has led you on and that's brought you to where you're at today.
Yeah. And first of all, I just want to say, I hope you didn't oversell me. I mean, saying things like expert, you know, those are scary words. So I will do my best.
Hey, you know more than us, and that doesn't take much. So,
well, you're very kind. So here's my story. I've been in ministry for almost 23 years. Hmm. About 11 years into ministry, I was a youth pastor and then associate pastor. Just felt the call of God and felt leading his life to plant a church. Hmm. And when I did that, I didn't have any idea what kind of journey God was going to take me on. I just thought, this is what I'm supposed to do. Got into that with a lot of expectations in my mind and what were put upon me by just our culture, you know, and the books that I was reading about church planting. And about a year, 2 years into that, I began to look around and say, this experience is not meeting my expectations or what was laid out for me as far as church growth, church development, what a church plant would look like after this many years. And what I had to go through was really what I've called a reorientation of my heart toward the right way of thinking about ministry, the right attitude. Mm. And just for the record, I mean, I was a youth pastor and some of the same attitudes and expectations were there as well. You go to youth ministers conferences and it's the same mentality, just a different type of ministry, right?
Yeah.
And so I just had to go through this process of realigning my heart with what God wanted for my ministry. And I began to look around at churches and realize small is everywhere. It wasn't just, you know, that my church wasn't growing at the rate I thought it was supposed to, or that I was struggling in a small church. There's small churches everywhere.
Yeah.
And I realized, you know, along the way, I had fallen for this belief that the half of 1% of all churches got to speak to and tell the other, you know, 98.5% how to do ministry.
Yep.
And that was, I realized what a destructive belief that was. Not that there's anything wrong with the larger churches, but we just kind of let them dictate, you know, how things should be in the church. And so that kind of gave rise to this idea that, hey, you know what? We're a small church, but God is at work here. Like, God is doing stuff. And I'm missing that because my eyesight, my focus is on just getting large, you know, and I'm missing the blessing of being small, and that's okay. And I also was missing the fact that as a small church, we were actually really healthy. Like, we were moving in a healthy direction. It's just that that health didn't necessarily result in this enormous numerical growth. And so putting the focus on that, that kind of gave me some ideas and began praying into that. And that's what sparked that idea, the small church is a big deal. And that phrase actually didn't come out as the title of the conference. That came out in a conversation that I just said, you know, it really is a big deal. The church is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And you know, so we'll talk more about where that went from there, but that's just kind of that was my journey. There's a lot of obviously, you know, moments and things that happened in there that led me to that point, but that's it in a nutshell. It's just that realization that I was focused on the wrong things. I was thinking about the wrong ways to measure what was happening in my church.
Is your church in a rural area?
We have a campus in Fenton, which is a town of about 12,000 people, and then one in Howell, which is about 8,000. So they have a city-like feel, but I would say they're probably more of a suburban feel than they are rural. So,
well, your potential reach, though, is about 20,000 for both, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, so it's going to be hard to build a mega church of 20,000 when your total reach is 20,000.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I asked that question is because, you know, and again, you know, you've read my book and we were both in the same campus, or just you know, you come out and I'm 58. You're much younger than I am. Are you, what are you in your 40s?
I'm going to be 45.
Yeah. Okay. So it didn't affect you as much as it did me, but I grew up in the 80s where everything was big. Christian television was big. Yeah. Music groups were traveling all the time. It was just, everything was about, and I don't want to say glitz and glamour because God used a lot of that.
Yeah.
But the problem was, it was, and this happens in all of our lives. Sometimes the things that we get off track with are things that were more caught than taught. Mm-hmm. And so I just caught growing up that, well, success is huge and big and glitzy and glammy and all that stuff. And I just missed the mark. And so that's why I ask you the question, you know, if you're in a town of 8,000, 10,000, if you're in a rural area, like our friend Thane is in Codell, Kansas, he can have a vision for a 10,000 seat auditorium. The problem is there's not 10,000 people around.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and at 95 Network, you've already used this word, and this is a word we used to. We're more interested in health than growth. We want you to grow. We want you to grow numerically because our belief is that if there's a lost person in your town, then God wants you to keep growing because mm-hmm. He wants to reach them. But if you're not healthy, we don't want you to grow.
Yeah,
right.
It'd just be a bigger mess. And so that's why I wanted to kind of set that scene for us today. As you talk, is you're not in a big, huge area, and I think that's important for our guys listening to today, and that, you know, is to understand. God wants you to bloom where you're planted. Mm-hmm.
Chris, what was the transition like for you from youth pastor to lead pastor?
It took a few years, and I got to give credit to the church that I was in because I was done with youth ministry about seven and a half, almost 8 years into that. I realized that I couldn't sustain that type of ministry. My lifestyle just wasn't where God had me. And so to their credit, they let me stay in that church. Even when I told them I'm done with youth ministry, said, stick around. And we'd like you to be the associate pastor of outreach and associate pastor of discipleship and small groups. And so I sort of lumped a few different things together.
Yeah.
And that was really important because that took me out of the youth mindset and put me into the scope of the church and how do we accomplish the vision? You know, because the pastor that I was under, great guy, love him, great shepherd and good mentor, but he was preaching. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, he was preaching, doing a lot of counseling. You know, I was the guy focusing on how do we be the church in this community? How do we reach out? How do we help people grow as disciples? And so that was a really important transition. And that's one of the things that alerted me to the fact that, hey, there's a lot of churches that aren't doing this. They're not reaching out. They haven't engaged in actual discipleship. There's a lot of activity, mm-hmm. but not a lot of fruit. And so that got me thinking, man, I think I want to do something more significant. That led into that church planning mindset of saying, I'd like to start from scratch. I want to build a church from scratch that has that built into its DNA without trying mm-hmm. to transform a 50 or 70 year old church, you know, into that. So that was a really important transition for me.
Should the pressure of you figuring out how the church should be the church in the community as the in the associate role, should that have been on your shoulders from your perspective?
Probably not. And because I, you know, as a lead pastor now, I look at it and say, yeah, that's got to come from me. That's got to come from the top. And I think that was his heart. I don't fault him in any way.
Yeah.
But I think it was, you know, in the story of at least my development, that was necessary, you know, to bring me to the point where I was ready to plant a church. But yeah, I think the lead pastor. And I don't want to get into this, you know, that the senior pastor has to go to the mountaintop and receive the tablets and come down and announce the vision to the people. I'm not in that camp, but I do think that the lead pastor has to take responsibility for that and has to be the driving force behind that.
Yeah.
Well, he certainly determines the direction the church goes based on his personality or her personality, how they lead. Absolutely. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And I think too, maybe what happened for you was you were just finding your gift. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, people don't just normally go do what you did. You know, you're the first guy we've had on here that I remember, and we've done 80 something podcasts. Is that right? Or 90, something like that. Yeah. And you're the first guy who said, you know, I was in this position. I'm going, boy, we need to do all that stuff. Well, that just acknowledges that call that's already within you of who mm-hmm. God's created you to be. I want to double down on something else. So you said that when you stepped down, the people just kept you there. Did they just like you?
Probably not. No,
well,
no.
I mean, that's very unique.
Yes.
You know, most churches are like, oh, well, you're done. You're out of here. What's next? So can you kind of talk about the dynamic of your relationship with the church as the youth pastors? They honestly, they watched you develop and grow into who God wanted you to be, and they were willing to do that. And I think that's awesome.
I think part of it was coming into that church. I mean, I was as green as they come. I mean, I was fresh out of college. I'd done 4 years.
When you knew everything?
Oh, yeah, for like the first 6 months.
Yeah.
I still remember early in my ministry, something happened with the youth, and it was not my fault. Okay. I knew it wasn't my fault, but I sat in a room with parents and one of them just looked at me and said, you know what? You need to just be quiet. Take your lumps. All right. You're 23. I'm 45. Just be quiet. I'm like, okay. All right. You know,
that was good. Listen, if you're under 30, that's great advice.
Just, you don't know it all. Let the parents talk, you know? Anyway, so yeah, I came out really fresh, green, you know, and I think they did enjoy kind of watching, you know, my development from preaching for 15 minutes the first time to preaching, you know, whatever, 35, 40 minutes when I was ready to go. And that came up a lot. They're like, for the first year you were at the church, we always got excited when you preached because we knew we'd be out of there before noon. You know?
I've never shared this on the podcast. So I have this guy that I grew up with and he felt God called him into preaching, you know? And so our pastor would always let the young preacher boys preach on a Wednesday night. Back then we had a Wednesday night church. And my friend, he got up to preach and he opened up his Bible and he read his stuff and he went over his notes and he literally had spoken 6 minutes. And he looked at the lead pastor and he goes, I'm done.
That's awesome.
And it was so cool. And so I get it, man. But hey, let's go the night the youth pastor is preaching his first night.
Oh, yeah.
We'll make it to Pizza Hut before everybody else.
Yeah. So I think that was definitely a factor. But I think too that there was just an attitude there of willing to let people try things, you know, to lean into their gifts and everything. And you're right in that I didn't know what kind of shepherd I really was until I'd been in ministry for 10 years. I mean, I didn't really know how my heart was really oriented. And this speaks back into the whole church size thing. I just wanted to mention this briefly. I know now that I'm not wired. I'm not gifted to lead a church of 5,000 people. That's not who I am.
And
I know
cool.
my gifts. I know how he's you know, built me. And I'm a shepherd. I'm a guy that wants to be with the 50, the 75 people and just pour into their lives. I want those relationships. I don't want the big crowd. So yeah, that was all part of that development. And I think they were seeing something I didn't see at the time. And they said, let's keep this guy around and let's keep chipping off some rough edges with him.
Well, that's so encouraging to me because typically we don't have many people on the podcast who can say that. It's usually the other way around. It's like, you know, as we move post pandemic and the church has to come to grips with lots of things. And in fact, I was talking to a friend the other day and I'm going, with what we do, if you just look at the way things are today, the prognosis for the future is not very exciting. Because there's a lot of broken churches and a lot of broken systems. But that makes me even more excited to think about the fact that Jesus is going to have to move in his church. And he will. And so to find groups of people that really are patient and basically living according to the New Testament, that's really cool, dude. And so I want to encourage those that are listening now who are not in those settings. There are really some great people out there that love you and love Jesus. And so don't let your bad experience keep you from keeping on because God will connect you with the right people in the future. So anyway, thanks for sharing that part there.
Yeah. You used the phrase, a reorientation of your heart earlier. And I know you talked a little bit of the perspective shift as far as church size goes, but dig into that a little bit.
Yeah. So I mentioned expectations. And you know, I know that the term is metrics, you know, how do we measure what's happening in our church? What is the system for success? How do we know when we're winning? And for the first few years of that, church plant, it was really butts in the seats. I mean, I'll just be real honest. That was it. It was butts in the seats. How many people can we get in here? And then as you grow, you're looking at, okay, what about the bucks? How many, you know, how many dollars in the bank? Mm-hmm. And then how, you know, what's the building like? What's the facility?
Three B's.
And what's that?
Three B's. Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah. Bucks, butts, and buildings. What is the, there's audience assets and auditorium.
I don't know. Anyway. I'm so proud of you. That was really good.
You know, I talk in the book about some of the shifts that I had to make. And then I think shifts that every pastor has to make. I realized that a lot of what I was doing in the church was out of fear. Hmm. I was afraid that I wouldn't live up to others' expectations. I was afraid that I was gonna have to close the church after a year. I was afraid of failure. I mean, just fear. Fear of what people would say, fear of people within the church, even this baby church of 20 people, making the wrong decision. And I was operating out of such fear that I was forgetting about faithfulness. Hmm. There was another shift that I talk about is that I was operating out of strictly a success mindset, that I have to succeed without really defining it beyond largeness, right? I just wanted to succeed. And what I was missing is the sacredness of the church itself and what the beauty of what God had created and what he had given us to bring the message to the world. I mean, the church is his idea. And mm-hmm. I was missing just the sacredness, the sanctity of that, the beauty of the church. And so I had to move from success to the sacred. And then the third big shift that I made was I was in a constant state of achievement. I was trying to achieve something. Mm-hmm. And I thought that by achieving something, that's how I would find my identity. I would be known as that guy, that pastor who took, hear the stories that he started at the church and there was only 20 people. And when he left, there was, 900. And I applaud that. That's fantastic. And so part of me wanted to be that guy. Mm-hmm. And what I realized though, is that I had it backwards. I thought achievement led to identity, which led to acceptance. And I just had it completely backwards. What I had to do is go back and find first identity. Mm-hmm. Who am I? Who am I in Christ? Who am I as a pastor, as a father, as a leader, all that, and get that squared away and know who I am. Mm-hmm. Know that I'm accepted. And then anything that happens after that is really an achievement for God, not for me. It's all his. And so I had those things in the wrong order. And those were the big shifts that I had to come to grips with over the course of a few years. And there was a lot of different factors that played into that. People spoke into my life, books that I read. But all those were the three big ones.
That's what I was going to follow that up with. Did you have someone mentoring you? Did you have someone that you talked to through this stuff, or did you have to figure it out on your own?
I did have to figure out a lot of it on my own. I had some coaches, some church planting coaches, great guys, but they got frustrated with me because I was doing everything they were telling me to do. And I'm like, guys, it's not working. And they were like, well, we don't know what to tell you. This is the playbook. This is the A plus B plus C equals D. And I'm like, well, I'm getting an answer of 424. I don't know how you add, letters and get a number, but it's not working for me. They said, well, just do the best you can. You don't want to hear about the church down the street. And I told the story not long ago on another podcast, just the fact that we had a baptism at our church and baptized like five people. Yeah. We're praising the Lord until someone in the church came up and said, check out this cool baptism video, pastor. And it's a church of 5,000. They've got three swimming pools and 10 pastors and all these people lined up which fantastic. I'm so glad that all those people got baptized. But emotionally, what you're telling me is, this was great, pastor, but this video, this is
the real deal. Mm-hmm.
And you have to, you do have to deal with that. You have to wrestle with that. You can't just bottle that up, because it does over time just drag you down and you don't seek those relationships that you should seek. Mm-hmm. Obviously with my wife, a lot of good communication. We talked about a lot of this and there were people eventually who warmed up to the idea what I was proposing, but there were people I would tell this to, I'd say, hey, small church, big deal. I think small is great. We ought to celebrate it. And they'd be like, no, that's not how this works. You're supposed to grow.
Well, I want to dive into that because here's the tension. The tension is it's okay to be small if you're healthy. But sometimes there are people who just say things, you're fine. Just stay like that. And they almost encourage us to not try.
Right.
And there's this tension exists, where if you're in a small church, there's nothing wrong with that. 95% of all the churches in America, of the 300,000 churches, they're small.
Yeah.
But what ministries like what you guys have and Carl and what we're doing here, and even this conference we're going to, we want to help people understand. We want you to be healthy first, but you know, it's okay to grow too. You don't allow yourself to get to this place to where you just, you've resigned to quit trying. And that's what I love about your story is you were contented with who God's created you to be, and you're comfortable with that, but you're still trying. And you're still impacting the community. Kind of talk through that a little bit.
Part of what is so destructive about the mentality that, you know, small is bad or we're doing something wrong is that you begin to think, what can we do? There's nothing we can do. You know, and I talk about that, the parable of the talents, you know, from the book of Matthew, and how a lot of pastors, I think, find themselves as like a one talent servant. They're like, well, I've just got this one talent. What can I do with 50 people? Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. It's not even worth investing in. What, you know, I'm not even going to bother. And that's such a destructive way of thinking. And obviously Jesus calls it out in the parable. He says, you missed the boat, man. You screwed up. And I don't want to be that one talent pastor. What I want pastors to do is you've got to get your thinking right. You've got to change over from this desperate need to be accepted and have achievement and grow this church and get to the point where you're saying, I'm going to do the absolute best that I can to serve God and to serve with these people. And I'm going to trust God for the result. You got to get there. I was just writing about this to our congregation this morning in our weekly newsletter. I look at what we've done over 10 years. We have been one of the most active churches in our area in terms of outreach. I mean, we've done a coat giveaway for the winter. We've done food giveaways. We've gone door to door. We've done neighborhood Easter egg hunts. I mean, on and on and on. Probably every month for 10 years, we have done some kind of outreach to this community. We're pressing against the darkness. I know that we are, and we're never going to stop. But the reason I bring that up is because a couple of churches in our area made the paper. We have a Tri-County, it's called Tri-County Times, and it goes out to about 10, 15,000 people. These two churches made the paper. And I realized as I saw their names in the paper, I realized we've been here for 10 years.
Amen.
We made the paper for an outreach.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
I was like, first I was like, come on, this is not fair, you know? And then I realized this is what I've been talking about for 10 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if we made the paper or not.
Amen.
What matters is we're reaching people for Christ. Yep. People have come to faith, and we just got to keep doing what we're doing. It's such a distraction. All that stuff is such a distraction.
I know, Austin, you got a great question, but I got to go into even this little. So have you, in your personal life, have you ever looked at another pastor and go, why is God blessing him? Or why is God blessing her? I mean, I know that person. They're not that good. And they've got 300 in our church and I've got 70. What is up with that?
Hey, we're being honest, right?
Yeah, I've been there. That's what makes this podcast great.
Yeah. That's so true, because it becomes about us, right? And and we just go, dang it, you know, I want that.
Come on, Jesus.
What are you missing,
man? Help a boy out, Jesus.
What about me?
I wanted to swing back to something you talked about. You talked about you made the shift from leading from fear. And I think that's common for a lot of us to lead from a place of fear. And so I wanted to come back to that and ask you, like, what does it look like? Like, what are some signals, I guess, that we're leading from that place?
A big one that comes to mind is when you are ready to make a decision that you feel is the one, it's where God's leading, that you stop and go, I wonder how the board's going to react.
Yeah.
I wonder how the church boss that's sitting in always sits in the third row, what are they going to say about this?
Yeah.
Who do I need to talk to first? And some of that's just good leadership. You do have to build that, you know, consensus with some decisions. But I think if you can't step out and make those decisions because God said so, God's leading that way, that's a good indicator. I think that we have to lead with boldness and courage. You can't worry about what everyone's going to say or what they're going to do.
And oftentimes our finances are tied to it too. You know, like, okay, well, if we attend, as you said, how did you say it? The church what? The church boss?
The church boss, he said.
I love that one because, you know, if the, I'll just give an example. We have a pastor friend who recently went, they planned for, I guess, for a year to take their family to the Grand Canyon for family vacation. And so, and they're, I think they live in the Midwest. Anyway, it's a long trip. So their family gets there, and on a Monday night, they've been there, they got their Sunday. Monday night, one of the board members calls and says, hey, I think it was like my brother's sister's, somebody distant kin died, and we need you to come back and do the funeral on Thursday. And he's like, well, we're on vacation here. We can't do that. And the guy was just like, well, you're my pastor. I need you to come do this funeral for me.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, my family's here, dude. You know, and the board member, the church owner, the boss, said this, well, you know, our family contributes a lot of money to this church. And if you're not here on Thursday, we won't be here on Sunday. Dude, that's real stuff. That's the opposite of the nice people who let you stay for all those years and figure you out.
Yeah.
You know, and so I didn't want to just slide by and say, well, you know, guys, don't have fear. It's the real deal, man. So, you know, if you're in that scenario, Chris, what do you do? What's the advice? If that pastor that I'm talking about called you up, what advice would you give him?
Well, I think, you know, I talk about this, you know, setting boundaries.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, it's too late. If you haven't set boundaries or you haven't established that in your ministry, you're a little behind there. But, you know, I can only say what I would do. And that is, I would have to say, you know, I love you. You are part of my congregation, and I desperately want to minister to you, but that's not something I can do right now. And I would give them some suggestions as to who to talk to and who could do that service, who could be there for them.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that goes on before you get to that conversation with you. And I know you know that because you're talking about developing leaders within your congregation. You're talking about, you know, preparing others for ministry. I've talked about that and talked about setting boundaries, but that's what I would say. And I would be as gentle and loving and kind as I could, but that's just not something that I could do. I'm not going to abandon my vacation.
Yeah. Or your family, you got to choose your family first, but the fear, the comparison I make it to is like a stallion. Yeah. A stallion will look at you every day and say, who's in charge? Fear will do that to you till you finally conquer it. But it doesn't mean it's going to go away. You're still going to have to face that thing.
Mm-hmm. And we do. I think we fear the fallout of decisions that we make. But if you think about who we're fearing the response of someone who's immature, someone who's probably not really in tune with the Holy Spirit and not acting in Christ-like ways. Like, we're fearing the lowest common denominator rather than, you know, trusting God to lead.
That's good.
You know, we fear failure. I think we fear conflict. That's a big one. I think we operate out of fear whenever we avoid conflict.
Yeah.
We just don't want to have that conversation. We don't want to have that meeting. I will say, I had a conversation or phone call, I should say, from someone back when I was a younger pastor, and they said, Pastor, we want to meet with you on Sunday. And I said, about what? Well, you'll find out. I said, then I'm not coming. I will not come to a meeting that you have not told me the purpose of. I'm not just going to show up and be ambushed.
That's good.
You know, so, but we operate out of fear though, and we just avoid those conversations entirely. Sometimes you have to go and have that conflict. I think we operate out of fear when we don't want to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, no pastor wants to be uncomfortable, you know, sitting across the desk from somebody and have to say those hard things. But somewhere we have to understand the greater calling and who God has asked us to be.
Mm-hmm. And the word says God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but power, love, and sound mind. So we know that spirit of fear is not from God. And and I'm glad we hung here, because if you're listening and you really fear is a daily part of your routine, you need to do a study. You need to go get help, go get counseling, whatever you got to do. You got to get that out of your life to fulfill the thing that you could become, because fear will limit your potential.
Mm-hmm. Chris, this has been awesome, and it's been really fun to talk to you. And we always like to close out just with one big question, and that is that you are talking to hundreds of small and mid-sized church pastors today and church leaders. And what is just one last thing that has been on your heart that you would like to leave with them today?
I think coming out of COVID, coming out of quarantine, obviously, there's a lot of issues, and Dale, you mentioned those, you know, there's churches in crisis and financially having struggle and things like that. And all those things need to be addressed. But one of the things that I'm afraid of right now, you just mentioned fear. I mean to stop this, but
we've got some counselors we're going to hook you up with.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Thank you. Let's rephrase it. I'm concerned. Okay. Yeah, I have a concern that coming out of this time, this last year, churches are going to slip back into some of the same things that we've been struggling with pre-COVID. The numbers and all that, it's just going to be repackaged.
Yeah.
It's going to have a new name to it. It's going to be like, hey, we'll help you post COVID with these things, but it's the same stuff being peddled under a different label. And I think if we're going to avoid that, if we're going to stay in this mode of let's be healthy, even if we're small, let's just seek God's best for us, then what we need to do is we need to have some conversations as churches, as pastors, about the theology of what is the church? Because right now we got people sitting on couches. We got people sitting on their kitchen counters, or people just, they're listening to a message while they're driving around on Sunday morning. And we need to redefine what is the church. And we need to do this for our people, because church is more than a concert and a speech. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not a concert and a speech. The church is something God created, and there's something behind it. And if we're going to get, to the core of what the church is and not fall for this repackaged stuff that we've had pre-COVID, we need to define it, and we need to know what is the church and how do we get people, to engage in corporate worship again and to want to be part of that again. Mm-hmm. So I know there's a lot of vague branches there and a lot of different things that we could follow up on, but that's kind of where I'm at. Right now, I'm actually trying to figure out a way to put that in a more concise package, because that really is concerning to me.
Yeah.
I feel like churches are getting wrapped up in their live stream and trying to be innovative, and they're forgetting the doctrine of the church. And what is that all about? And how do we get people to engage in that?
So I know I said that was my last question, but I'm going to ask another one.
I knew it wasn't going to be.
There's no way.
We still got 2 minutes.
Who cares?
This is our podcast.
What will it look like for those same perspectives to be repackaged? Like, what should we be looking for to guard against that?
So I think when you get an email that says, a post-COVID attendance slumping, I can show you how to grow your church, in the next 6 weeks. Okay. And I've gotten those kinds of emails. I'm actually going to talk about this at the conference that hasn't happened yet.
That will have happened.
But when you get told like, hey, I've got the magic bullet to bring people back into your building. Hmm. I've got an outreach idea that is so creative and so innovative. No one is doing it, but I'm going to tell all 500 of you that join my webinar. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that you can hear the language and it triggers something in a pastor's mind. They go, ooh, I need that. I need that. And I think that those are, again, they're repackaged. It's the same thing, boosting attendance, super, innovative outreach and this and that. It's all about the growth as opposed to the health, I think. And so I just say, be on guard.
You can't sustain hype. It'll wear you out. And if it's about hype, it'll wear you out. Man, this has been great for me personally, because as we have mentioned, you and I are going to be together next week in Washington State doing the conference together with Carl. And I'm excited about that to talk personally. And I know we're going to have some good fellowship together there. I also want to say, if anyone's listening, we have intentionally created on our website, we have a strategic partner called Pastor Serve. If you're a pastor and you're struggling right now, please just go click on that link and connect with Jimmy and the folks at Pastor Serve. There's also, we have a resource directory inside our website, and there's multiple areas where we talk about specific things, and we've connected links to people who can help you. Mm-hmm. So if you're struggling, if you're bound by fear, honestly, if you've not been to counseling and you're a lead pastor, you need it. I don't even know you, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs somebody to talk to. So I wanted to make sure we had mentioned that help is, that's why we're here. That's why we do what we do, is to try to connect you with the right people. And having you on today, Chris, has been certainly one of those people. And so I'm very appreciative of you and your heart and your ministry. Austin, at points, it sounded like he had written a book called Stalled, because there's a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Chris.
This is great. I love to talk about this. I love to encourage pastors. And if I don't talk about it and where God's brought me, then it's been wasted. I don't want to waste it. I think He did it for a reason. Thank you.
thanks for listening to episode 81 of the 95 podcast. As always, we just want you to know that we are cheering you on. We believe in you and your work matters. We are so grateful for what you're doing for the kingdom. And hey, don't forget, we've got something new going on. We love that you listen to the podcast. And so we created a discount code in our shop where you can check out Vision Box, Stalled Box, 95 Network membership, all of the different things that we have going on. And if you just use the code podcast, you can get 10% off any of that stuff. We'd love for you to check it out. Again, you can go to 95network.org, check out the store, and you can use the code podcast on any of that stuff to get 10% off. And if you're already a member of 95 Network, don't forget, you get even larger discounts on all of our resources. And the code where you can find that is in your member hub. Great insight from Chris today on this episode. And I just loved his reminder that success is not directly correlated to the size of your church. You don't have to be a large church to be successful. Jesus is not disappointed in you. So friends, we hope you have a great week, and we will see you right back here on the 95 Podcast next Tuesday.